using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
It's Monday, the 10th of May, year of our Lord, 2021. It's day 422. 422 days of America held hostage. As you probably saw over the weekend, we had a second Canadian pastor jailed and now being given enhanced treatment reserved for political prisoners while he is in jail. There is more discussion about the Salk Institute study. I had a very thoughtful reply from a biologist. We'll talk about that. And a massive new agency to identify pre-crime people likely to commit violent acts. Sounds like Soviet-style commitment of dissidents. We'll be right back. Well, over the weekend, we had Elon Musk get onto Saturday Night Live and basically destroyed Dogecoin as if it needed any help from him. But it did need help from him to get going and basically called it a scam. I took it out. But I found this article to be more interesting than the Saturday Night Live appearance. And that was something that came out the day before he went on to Saturday Night Live. Possibly saw this on Drudge Report or some of the other sensational news. And the fact that there was a science fiction story done back in 1952, before he was born, called Project Mars. And it described a man named Elon who ruled over the Red Planet. Now, that might just be a coincidence, right? Or it may be a little bit more. You know, the guy who wrote the story was Wernher von Braun, right? Maybe you know about Werner, maybe you don't. I don't know. But here's a little bit of an introduction about Wernher von Braun, the German scientist who was at the heart of our space program. This is from Lair. Here we go.
Gather round while I sing you of Wernher von Braun, a man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. Nazi schmatzi, says Wernher von Braun. Don't say that he's hypocritical. Say rather that he's apolitical. Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department, says Wernher von Braun. Some have harsh words for this man of renown, but some think our attitude should be one of gratitude, like the widows and cripples in old London town, who owe their large pensions to Wernher von Braun. You too may be a big hero, once you've learned to count backwards to zero. In German or English, I know how to count down. And I'm learning Chinese, says Wernher von Braun.
Well, he summed that up perfectly, didn't he? It's pretty amazing. If you read Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobson, that was Tom Lehrer. If you read what she had to say, Wernher von Braun was royalty as part of Operation Paperclip. If you want to know how we got gain-of-function Nazi science and the NIH and a lot of these other things, as a scientist that were courted, he basically dictated the terms to the U.S. Army that were coming. Arrogant, unbelievably arrogant, entitled royalty from the very beginning. Nothing was ever done to him for the slave labor that he used at Peenemunde to build the rocket ships and other things. But why do I bring him up? Besides the fact that he wrote a novel talking about a guy, Elon, who would be the governor of Mars. Well, I don't know, except that perhaps this is exactly the type of guy that Elon Musk's family adores. An arrogant technocrat who thinks that you deserve nothing more than to be their slaves. Who has no regard for the human life, anybody else's human life, just their own. And this is exactly where the Musk family comes from. Joshua Haldane, his grandfather, kicked out of Canada because he tried to institute a technocracy. That's why he's coming back from South America. And he's been given all of these massive subsidies and government contracts because now the technocracy has been established. We're operating under an Operation Paperclip Nazi-style government, if you hadn't noticed. And these people are holding sway. So yeah, he can come out and say Dogecoin was a hustle, or is a hustle, on Saturday Night Live. And dropped it from about 73 cents to 42 cents per coin. just out of that comment. And they had people who had done analysis of this and said, well, you know, if he needs to mention it fairly early and, you know, it's going to really affect the price of Dogecoin. This is the kind of artificial insanity, especially in the investment environment that we're living under now. And of course, he did mention it, mentioning that it's a hustle, and it did take a bite out of Dogecoin, didn't it? So how is this going to look? And we're going to get into what is happening. You want to know what would happen? We had back in the beginning of the 20th century, back in the 1930s, his grandfather was run out of Canada for trying to establish a technocracy. But now the technocracy is arresting pastors left and right. We've had the second pastor arrested, Arthur Perlowski, that I interviewed about a month ago. And he's being given very harsh treatment in the same way that the other pastor, James Coates, was arrested. He was in jail for 35 days without getting bail. They kept him under very harsh conditions. He was kept in solitary confinement, given 15 minutes a day to get out. And it sounds like Arthur Perlowski, based on an interview, a call that he had with Rebel News, it sounds like the treatment that he's being given is very similar to what I've heard from a lot of political prisoners like Ammon Bundy and others. Bright lights to make sure that you can't get to sleep, even though the adjacent cells of the people who are not political prisoners, their lights are turned off so they can get sleep. No bed, no blanket, just a concrete floor, cold concrete floor to sleep on, while the other prisoners get beds and blankets. You get the idea, right? It's enhanced. It's enhanced torture. Kind of like, you know, the CIA did their enhanced interrogation. This is just enhanced internment. The special treatment for the people who are arrested, not because they committed a crime, but because they questioned the government. Because they questioned the government's acting under color of law. But let me tell you where this is headed. We have the Biden administration, and this is not something that sprang out of the Biden administration. They're moving on with this, but this is actually something that began, of course, under the Trump administration, like most of this stuff did. Began by a person who's very close to President Trump. They're saying that they're going to set up a health DARPA. You know, DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects. And we've had a lot of very dark stuff come out of DARPA. And so when you create a health DARPA, I'm actually going to call it HARPA. How about that? As Unlimited Hangout has a very long article, very detailed article. We're not going to go fully into depth on it. We'll revisit this because this is a key issue that is coming up. But it's actually, even though it's being sold as medical, it's being used for political tyranny against enemies and dissidents. Exactly like this entire pandemic for the last 422 days that President Trump put in, began. It's not about health. It's about control. It's about surveillance. And from the very beginning of this, we were told, well, we've got to have nothing is going to be allowed. No therapeutics. There's not going to be any therapeutics for this. This is the worst pandemic the world has ever seen. Well, we didn't see that, did we? We saw a lot of panicked press reports at the beginning, just like we're seeing now coming out of India. And I take those with a grain of salt, quite frankly, because I've seen all the lies before. I saw the lies in China. I saw the lies in Italy. I saw the lies in New York City. I don't believe what's going on in India either. They were all debunked. And we've already had reports coming out of India saying, don't believe this. Reports from individuals, reports from news media. So I'm not going to go into that, but I will say that the purpose of all of this, and it ought to raise your suspicions, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that Salk Institute study. I had a very thoughtful comment sent to me by a guy who is a biologist, and he and another individual will debate. They have a back and forth. I don't think they debate each other. I think it's kind of a friendly discussion. I read the notes on it. I didn't listen to the podcast, but he had some very thoughtful comments about this Salk Institute study, because a lot of people push back, especially Twitter. I had my show last Friday essentially blocked on Twitter. Interestingly enough, they didn't take it down yet, and they didn't take down my channel yet. You can find me, by the way, on thedavidknightshow.com. If you go to social media to find all your news and information, you're going to get a very controlled narrative, and it's going to get more and more controlled. My days on Twitter are numbered, I'm sure, already to the extent that I'm there, but typically people don't see my comments unless they've got 100 or fewer followers, I've noticed. Occasionally I'll get somebody who's got a couple of thousand followers. Well, I haven't seen any of your stuff for a very long time, so I went and looked to see if you're still here. Oh, look at this. He's been tweeting all this time. If they limit it, I think that's one of the ways that they shadow ban. If they limit your comments to being seen by people who have very few followers, then with a few exceptions, they can limit your reach that way. I don't know exactly what they're doing, but I do know that for the first time I've seen this. They labeled the show that we put up at Periscope last Friday. They said, this is disinformation. They removed all the comments on it and took away the ability to leave comments, and they took away the ability to retweet it. Very interesting, because that's where this is headed. They're not only doing that, but they're also, if they think that there's something in your tweet that they don't like, they will come back and warn you about that, kind of intimidate you. They found that's enough for most people to take the tweet down and not put it out, so they can intimidate you. And this has been happening in multiple ways. But getting back to this article from Unlimited Hangout, this Biden proposal could make the U.S. a digital dictatorship. Biden is widely praised in mainstream and health care focused media for his call to create a new biomedical research agency modeled after DARPA. They would seek to develop innovative and breakthrough treatments for cancer, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, ending cancer as we know it. But far from ending cancer the way most Americans might envision it, the proposed agency would merge national security with health security. This has always been the plan. We go back to 9/11. You had right there at the beginning, as I pointed out, just a couple of months before 9/11, you had the first Johns Hopkins CDC simulation of a pandemic. The moral was that you had to lock everybody down with draconian regulations and push out a vaccine that was untested. And they had 20 more of those simulations up until the last one, event 301. It was Dark Winter was the first one. And a week after 9/11, you had an attack, the anthrax attack. They used that then to push out legislation to the states modeled after what they had done in the simulation. And so health security and national security, homeland security, and the pandemic lockdown have been tied together since the 9/11 event. Just more indications of who pulled that off. In such a way, they tie these together to use both physical and mental health, warning signs to prevent outbreaks of disease or prevent violence. before they occur. Such a system is a recipe for a technocratic pre-crime organization. And that's exactly what this is. Minority Report. Pre-crime. As a matter of fact, geospatial intelligence has been working on this for a very long time, as I pointed out, as they were putting the internet into physical practice, designed in the 1960s by a DARPA psychologist, J.C.R. Licklider, but made practical as bandwidth and switching circuitry came around in the 90s. Then they began funding competitors who would work with them. You had the rise of geospatial intelligence, where James Clapper built his career. And the purpose of geospatial intelligence is to map political and religious beliefs and to come after people and anything else that they want to map. Oh, they would never come after people for their religion, right? Not a conspiracy theory anymore, is it? It's a conspiracy, not a theory. Been put into practice, and it's going to get much worse if we don't stop this. And again, how do we stop this? Are we going to vote these scoundrels out? Of course not. We don't have any elections in this country or any of these other countries, really, for the that are any fairer than one in the Soviet Union. No, you're going to have to resist them from the ground up, not participate in their system, not take it over. You're not going to do anything with the Republican Party. As a matter of fact, we'll talk about what the Republican Party is not doing in terms of the trans agenda later in the broadcast. But the Biden administration has asked Congress for $6.5 billion to start the agency. Oh, but it's going to get much bigger than that. You're going to, already, that'll bring up the NIH budget to over $51 billion. And let me tell you, it's going to grow exponentially. It'll be largely guided by Biden's recently confirmed top science advisor, Eric Lander, formerly the head of the Silicon Valley-dominated Broad Institute, controversial for his ties to eugenicists and child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, and his relatively recent praise for James Watson, an overtly racist eugenicist. Isn't it funny how these satanic plans are coming from people who are see themselves as gods and always seem to have ties to eugenics, to the technocracy. The technocracy and eugenics are tied at the hip, folks. They're one and the same thing. This is why when you look at this and these people say, well, there's only one thing that you can have, and that's the vaccine. Now, that's disturbing enough, considering the ties of Bill Gates and these other people to Planned Parenthood and other eugenicist organizations. But the vaccine and the eugenics is part of that. It also funnels us into the control and surveillance aspect of it. That's why they're putting out the vaccine passport. That's why this is the key for them, why they cannot allow anything else out there. We can talk about the mechanism of the vaccine, try to analyze what these people are saying from a logical standpoint. They're not going to show you any data, even if they've tested this stuff. And yet, we can still see data on the VAERS that indicates that there's issues with it. But I tell you, this is a hard pass for me, simply from the standpoint, even if I believed it was 100% safe, 100% effective, I would still oppose it with every fiber of my being because of this, because of the precedent that they're establishing, because they're saying, you must take this. If they told me I must take a drink of water offered to me by Fauci, I would refuse that under principle. You will respect my informed consent or this whole experiment in a republic is over. It's over. It died a long time ago. We better start rebuilding something else that is along the lines of that. But if you tell me what I must have, it's bad enough when they would tell us, the FDA and other organizations would tell us, what medicine we could not have. That's not your decision to make. But I always said, if they can tell you what you cannot have, for example, medical marijuana. And it's not just that. Back in the early 90s, you had, Orrin Hatch, Republican, from Utah. There were a lot of companies in Utah that made nutraceuticals, natural thing. And they were trying to regulate vitamin C at the time. In the early 90s, the idea coming from the FDA was that you would not be able to buy vitamin C in any potency higher than the recommended daily allowance, which is something like 60 milligrams. I take on a regular basis, I take 1,000 milligrams. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you that's my choice. But they were going to say, well, we're going to limit it to 60, just arbitrarily. You don't have that authority. And we had a Libertarian Party convention in Salt Lake City, and he spoke at it. Because even though we had a lot of disagreements with him on a lot of different policies, we all agreed that that was overreach, and that was defeated at the time. And I'm glad it was. But if they can tell you what you cannot have vitamin C in this particular concentration or whatever, you must have the vaccine, we're done. If we succumb to that attitude, where our informed consent does not matter to them, where they can force us to take an experimental drug that has not been tested, any kind of vaccine or therapeutic, I don't care what it is. But the simple fact that they're going to mandate this, the simple fact that they pushed everything else out to the side, said you can't have that, you can't see that, you're crazy, that right there told you all you needed to know to reject everything that they're doing here. All right, so this is HARPA, and the NIH get its budget up to $51 billion. As a matter of fact, I made a mistake when I tweeted out the show today. I put that figure there. It'll start, HARPA will start at $6.5 billion, not $51 billion. But believe me, it will get there very quickly. Just take a look at what happened to the Department of Education created by Jimmy Carter. Ronald Reagan was going to get rid of it, but it was orders of magnitude larger by the time the Reagan administration ended 8 years later. He did nothing to get rid of it. He nurtured it. ARPA will likely heavily fund and promote mRNA vaccines as one of the breakthroughs that will cure cancer. Some of the mRNA vaccine manufacturers have already produced propaganda saying that cancer is, quote, the next problem to tackle with mRNA technology, said Pfizer. How did this come about, though? In 2019, the same foundation and individuals currently backing Biden's HARPA had urged President Trump to create it, not for the main purpose of researching treatments for cancer and Alzheimer's, but to stop mass shootings before they happen, through the monitoring of Americans for neuropsychiatric warning signs. Now, folks, you've seen this pattern before. Anybody who was a Soviet dissident was identified as being mentally unstable and taken off to the gulag. This is exactly where this is coming from. And this is about the time, 2019, that President Trump, when he was asked about gun control, said, well, you have to take the guns and do the due process later, right? Remember that? Where's that coming from? HARPA. HARPA. And now it's rolling out to be expanded by Biden. So the problem is that it doesn't really matter who is in charge, does it? Trump, Biden, it doesn't matter. The agenda of the deep state, the dark state, continues unabetted by either of these placeholders. And we get so upset about it. As a matter of fact, you still got Sidney Powell, you still got Marjorie Greene and Matt Gaetz, with friends like Matt Gaetz, who needs enemies, right? But you still got these clowns out there talking about the election. And as I said before, I said, if you're going to allow people like Fauci, President Trump, to run us, to run this country, to dictate everything, and you're going to stand by with your hands folded and give him the podium, it really doesn't matter if you're in the Oval Office or not. We can have Biden. He'll do the same thing. Both of them being run by Fauci's dictates. What difference does an election make if we're going to be governed by unelected bureaucrats? And we are. For the last few years, one man has been the driving force behind HARPA. Former vice chair of General Electric, former president of NBC Universal, Robert Wright. Through the Suzanne Wright Foundation, named for his late wife, Robert Wright has spent years lobbying for an agency that would, quote, develop biomedical capabilities, detection tools, treatments, medical devices for the millions of Americans who are not benefiting from the current system, he said. But his 2019 proposal to his personal friend, Donald Trump, revealed his underlying ambitions. At first, the proposal by Wright in 2019, the flagship program of HARPA would be Safe Home. What does the acronym stand for? Stopping Aberrant Fatal Events by Helping Overcome Mental Extremes. Again, the red flag that you heard from Trump. Safe Home would suck up masses of private data from Apple Watches, Fitbits, Amazon Echo and Google Home, and other consumer electronic devices, as well as information from healthcare providers to determine if an individual might be likely to commit a crime. The Department of Justice's pre-crime approach is known as DEEP, appropriate for the deep state. It was activated just months before Trump left office. It was also justified as a way to stop mass shootings before they happen. And as part of all of this, what you see returning is DARPA's total information awareness. Remember that? Know everything about everybody? But also the pre-crime. I mentioned before, geospatial intelligence. Part of their, some of their programs are anticipatory intelligence. Right? Human domain analytics. But it's anticipatory. They have a whole branch to anticipate where the crime is going to be, pre-crime. DARPA's past total surveillance dragnet is coming back to life under a supposedly separate health-focused agency, one that emulates its organizational model, no less confirms that many total information awareness-related programs were merely distanced from the Department of Defense when it was supposedly officially shut down. As a matter of fact, as they shut down total information awareness, they did it on the day that Facebook went public. An unlimited hangout has recently reported major aspects of total information awareness were merely privatized, given to companies such as Facebook and Palantir. Palantir focuses on data harvesting. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come right back. One bit of good news I'll give you before we go to break. Tennessee has passed a revolutionary bill. Free Thought Project has that in the headlines. State passes revolutionary bill. It is very important. Finally, banning no-knock warrants. This thing that was created with Biden's war on drugs. You should be very concerned about what these people are proposing with HARPA, considering that Biden is very, very proud of his police state drug war and Patriot Act bills. He considers himself to be the author of both of those. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
And I want to just say real quickly, I've had several people who have, many people have sent us comments and contributions for Scout, but especially saying that they're praying for us. I really do appreciate it. It's got a very nice card here that looks very much like Scout. Thank you for that. Thank you, Ryan, for the generous donation to help pay for Scout's medical bills. He's still in the hospital, and we should have an update tomorrow. He is. We put him in again last Tuesday, and we're coming up to about a month since there he is. Good job, Travis. I didn't know you had that. He's been in for about a month, or been fighting this for about a month, and he was mauled, some of you may know, by several dogs, and he, we're afraid he's going to lose his leg. The doctor's been trying to get the fluid out, so he's got a big gaping hole that is really horrific. We're trying to keep it clean, give him exercise, and it's constantly oozing. He's trying to get that down with more frequent antiseptic cleaning as well as exercise so we can close that wound up. But we put him in last Tuesday. They were going to keep him until Saturday, but they extended it until tomorrow. So we'll know something tomorrow. But thank you so much for all the prayers for him, because we treat, but God heals. And so we really do appreciate that. And a very close, dear member of the family to us. I just wanted to cover some other letters. We had I've had an EMS a person who has written multiple times, and I found this to be very interesting. Travis, you got the picture of the swab. Get that ready if you got that. He said another update from an EMS perspective. He said, last night I finally had an adverse reaction patient that actually regretted taking the shot. Usually they can't connect the dots. They praise the vaccine as they lay on my stretcher and suffer the effects of what they perceive to be a modern-day miracle. This one was a 72-year-old female with a moderate shortness of breath. Her doctor told her that she would never survive a COVID infection because she had a history of asthma. I got her permission to send her information on the real agenda and the damage the vaccine is causing. I sent her two of your shorter video links and your nightly report site. What's already done cannot be reversed, but she says she will never again take a COVID shot. And he said, maybe you've got a new viewer. Well, welcome. I hope she finds the information helpful. He said, on BitChute, I saw a video of someone swabbing a piece of meat with what was said to be a COVID specimen swab. The swab appeared to leave a few almost microscopic bristles and fibers on it and that lodged into the meat. So he says, I've been on the lookout for some unattended collection kits in the ER, and I finally found two of them. I did my own experiment at home, and sure enough, it does appear that some of the swab bristles and fibers were left behind on the meat. If this is a common attribute of these COVID swabs, it's no wonder that people have sinus issues from the tests. It would be like having fiberglass rubbed into your sinuses. I'm including a close-up of the swab. Did you get that? Oh, yeah, there you go. You might zoom in on that a little bit as well. He says, I apologize, it's not crystal clear, but you can still see that the swab is covered in hundreds, if not thousands, of tiny bristles, and you can see that, very fragmented. I find that to be very interesting. One person writing from the, I think it's from the UK, I think, yes. Unfortunately, we now got a letter from our landlord asking to make an appointment because the wiring of the entire house has to be inspected. Apparently, it's a new law. They will send two electricians who maybe have been injected, and the work will last for at least an hour. We see this as a very severe threat. What can we do? What would you do? Any advice is appreciated. Well, and again, what they're concerned about is the idea that if you're going to get a vaccine that's going to start reproducing the spike and other issues, and I'm going to get into this right now, the back and forth about whether or not the spike that is created by the vaccine is causing vascular and lung damage, or is it only the spike that comes from the virus, that they say? Well, because your body is turned into a manufacturing facility, right? The purpose of the mRNA is to get your body to manufacture these spikes. A lot of people concerned about that said, well, I don't want that shedding because of what some people have said about how the vaccine and the establishment media has mentioned that, yes, it causes irregularities in women's periods, so forth, that they said, well, you know, other women believed that even though they weren't vaccinated, that this had shed to them in some way. And there is something that happens with women who are working together in terms of synchronization of cycles. And so all of that is, this is something that people are talking about. And of course, it is speculative, but we have to do our own speculation since they won't do any testing, right? So this is part of what happens when the government does not have transparency, when they obviously have an agenda that is not in our best interest. We're going to start asking questions about what they're really up to. And that's a reasonable thing to do. It really is. Every time the government comes in and charges anybody with a crime, they charge them with conspiracy. And whenever you are doing, for example, a murder investigation, take your typical Agatha Christie or Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes story. What do? They have a theory. They examine that theory to see if it fits the facts. That's the way you do deductive reasoning in an investigation. But they try to demonize it by calling it theorizing, conspiracy theory. Well, here's what I would say to this the listener here, Greenbeak. I would say, well, I would say the same thing about shedding that I would say to the people who are panicking about the COVID thing. And I would say that if the person is not sick, I don't think they've got a viral load that they can shed with you. And that that includes whether it is something coming from the vaccine or whether it is something coming from the virus or whatever. If you don't have symptoms, forget about it. And this is something that we have to be logically consistent about this. I've constantly pushed back against the idea, and so have many doctors and scientists and virologists, that if you are not sick, you're not contagious because you don't have a sufficient viral load to share it with other people. I would say the same thing about the shedding issue, regardless of what is really happening there. It has to be up to a part where the person is actually sick, I would say. But if you're concerned about it, I would just say go full COVID on them. Say, I want you wearing masks. I want you wearing gloves. As a matter of fact, get a hazmat suit if you're going to come into my house. You know, just go full paranoia, full OCD on them. And finally, you can say, and I don't think that your inspection of my house is an essential thing, considering the risk to health. So just tell them to go away.
Go away.
I don't want you in my house because you're non-essential. And you're violating the rules here. You know, you're a foreigner coming into my... You're not part of my cohort. You're not part of my social bubble. So just burst their bubble that way. I had, and this has been on my desk for a while. I hadn't gotten to it. This is coming out of Michigan. This is a situation that was passed to me by people who were in a support group, which is one of the ways that we need to do this. Saying, we had somebody who attended our meeting regarding a situation in southeast Michigan where a man was hit by a car on Sunday, sustained several injuries, having surgery today, and that was a week ago. His wife was with him at the hospital for a day, then went home temporarily. When she returned, the hospital would not allow her to re-enter the hospital unless she received the vaccine. So that is a very troubling thing. They said, well, the family has asked us for the moment to let them have a chance to pursue their civil steps. Let's see, this is the problem. Medical kidnapping of patients, excluding people who should be able to make informed choices for them, or just family members. I mean, this is the horrific situation that we're in right now. And quite frankly, I'll just call it medical malpractice. These people are being incentivized by the federal government. This is one of the things that was done 422 days ago by the federal executive order, President Trump's executive order, national state of emergency. It released the money to the state governors, let them use it as their own personal purse. We saw that very clearly in Idaho. He kept control of that money and doled it out to whoever he wished. And it was four times the size of the state budget. In Utah, they're showering them with $1.5 billion, even though they've got a $1.5 billion surplus already. In California and in Illinois, bankrupt states winding up with a massive surplus. They were bought off. They also love to exercise control over your life. But that money and that control gives them power that they've never experienced before. And it has corrupted them. Power corrupts, said Lord Acton. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's what we've seen this last year. But it is also corrupted and empowered and showered with cash, the hospitals. They have been incentivized for malpractice. And it is a unbelievably corrupt situation that has spread everywhere. As a matter of fact, I have the, I wanted to get into the coronavirus issue first. Well, I'll say one more thing. This is from another listener. We're being marketed and scammed by Dr. Mercola over the COVID situation, over the censorship. My take on it was I thought it was shameless kowtowing to the cancel mob when I read his letter. Well, I've been threatened of being having my social media accounts taken down. I've had some other vague threats. He wasn't very specific about it. But seriously, are you going to take down legitimate information about vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, and other things? You're going to purge that off of your website? Shame on you. Shame on you to live by that lie. But she says, well, there's actually more to it. This is from Barbara. Besides pulling down his COVID content, she says, but wait. You can't read that article where he talks about his COVID content unless you give your email so they can market to you. And she said, this is what Mercola has been doing throughout COVID, using enticing articles on his website about COVID that you can't read unless you give him your email. Never let a crisis go to waste, the Rahm Emanuel model, she says. She said, you yourself mentioned it as Mercola caving to the woke mob. But she said the crescendo to the crisis was Mercola going on the Alex Jones show May the 5th to tell his story. Of course, Alex played fast and loose with the facts, hyped it with claims that the military and the CIA hit teams may be employed against the, quote, disinformation dozen from this document. So what did we find out from the Alex Jones interview with Dr. Mercola, she says? It started with a repeat of the above article that you can't read without giving him your email. But it said, Dr. Mercola is getting unspecified threats, no specifics, no proof. B, he has allegedly purged his websites of the COVID information. C, he took down his website that he had put up specifically for COVID, which was stopcovidcold.com. But he quickly pivoted to how good things were going. A, you can buy his book on Amazon that apparently has all that same COVID information. And B, since we're in a financial crisis and the solution is to buy Bitcoin from Max Kaiser at SwanBit with the same free $10 of Bitcoin offer that Alex Jones offers. So she said, let's review what happened here. Mercola has not had anything taken down by outside forces. And his book that he's been working on for months suddenly had a good marketing opportunity with the publication of the Disinformation Dozen. And that was 12 people that they said, these are the people like RFK Jr., Sherry Tenpenny and others, Mercola, who are influencing people with disinformation because they disagree with the government narrative. So with that, his solution to his problems and to his threats, I mean, we're all under threat, right? Anybody who says anything that is opposed to the government's official story about anything. It doesn't matter. It could be COVID. It could be the vaccines. It could be the election. Whatever. If you disagree with the government in 21st century America, you're going to get threatened. You're going to get purged. You're going to get canceled. It's just a fact of life. Except how did he respond to this? Well, if you go to that website that he said he took down, stopcovidcold.com, what it does is it directs you directly to Amazon, where you can buy the book from Amazon for $27, and it's not censored by Jeff Bezos or Amazon. Isn't that interesting? The alternative media and Alex Jones gave Mercola millions in advertising for the $27 book sold by Bezos. And they're not censoring Mercola. Isn't that interesting? So I thought that was an accurate take on this. But let's talk about the article that I headlined on Friday that I did have censorship with, that, as I pointed out, they labeled it with a blue label, They removed all the comments. They removed the ability to comment, and they removed the ability to retweet that. Strangely enough, they didn't take the show down. So it's still there. But that's, I guess, a warning to me. I don't take warnings. Sorry, Jack. But I talked about this article. COVID-19, a vascular disease, a coronavirus spike protein attacks vascular system on a cellular level. And I had some people send me a mocking article that really didn't have any substance in it at all. It's just to say, oh, these anti-vaxxers, they'll grab anything. They're a bunch of conspiracy nuts and yada, yada, yada. And then pointing out that at the conclusion, the people said, well, we think that the it's not really that it's a different mechanism. We don't think that, you know, that there's a difference between the spike that is created by the mRNA vaccine and the natural exogenic spike. And actually, it is protective. So it's a good thing, we think, right? Which is what you would expect the Salk Institute to say and the NIH. And I didn't go into that because nobody in the Salk Institute, if they value their career, is going to end their statement with a criticism of the vaccine. You're just not going to do that. That's it. You're done. Okay, you're not going to get any more research money, you're not going to get published, and you're going to get fired or canceled everywhere. So, of course, that's the case. But we can look at their own statistics, their own numbers, their own VAERS system, and we can start to connect the dots. And so that was the key. We've had a lot of people pointing out circumstantial evidence about this, about the mRNA vaccines and the damage that it was causing, the massive number of deaths. And I have another statistic to give you here in a moment, another very interesting way to look at this. So we've had a lot of people talking about that circumstantially. What was important, I thought, about this paper was the fact that they detailed that, you know, yeah, we put in a pseudovirus, just basically a shell with all of these spikes on it, and we could find that that in and of itself would irritate the endothelial lining, cause vascular damage, cause lung damage. It would explain a lot of these problems that we're seeing. And so I thought that detailed analysis was worth talking about. And I thought, really, it is a smoking gun. Now, I got a more thoughtful approach to this from someone who perhaps is a listener because they referenced my program. He has a podcast as well, David Schmidt, PhD, a biologist. He says, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I am an opponent of the real potential for malevolent genetic manipulation and this platforming of pharma agents. So he and another individual have a podcast, podomatic.com is where they're hosted, and it's under D. Schmidt. But anyway, he said he and his podcast partner had read the paper very carefully. And he said, I'm not sure that this paper can be used to demonstrate that the S proteins introduced by the pseudovaccines are necessarily the cause for the adverse reactions via some process described in this paper. Now, I'm going to get into the weeds a little bit here on this. And I don't, as I said from the very beginning, even if I believed that this vaccine was 100% safe and effective, I would still refuse it because of the way that it's being pushed on us as the only solution, how they have pushed away therapeutics and how they're using this to violate our informed consent, to say you must have this and I must be able to track to see if you've had that. All of those things are enough for you to oppose this and to not take it. But then in addition, it is not tested. And so all of these things are issues. We'll add to that the vast number. We've never seen anything like this in just 4 months now. We've never seen anything like the adverse reactions and deaths from any other vaccine that we have with this. But nevertheless, just ignore it. Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. But anyway, let's do get into this, because this is, I think you will find this interesting. The S protein, says David Schmidt, perhaps could become liberated by some mechanism or destructive process and then subsequently bind to ACE2 receptors studding the surface of the luminal, that is the interior side, of a blood vessel. But this would be purely speculative at this point, If not merely speculative, then we could go from here and look for this possibility. So, the way that this is alleged to work, and he admits that they haven't really, this is their story. So, you don't have a microscope, and perhaps you do now have the ability to see some of this stuff at a microscopic level, but they're not observing this. They're not observing it in a glass, under a microscope, or in the body, right? That if you go back to Kerry Mullis and the debates that he was having with Fauci, misusing his PCR test that he got a Nobel Prize for, he said, this guy is an idiot. He thinks you can look under a microscope and see this virus. Well, I don't know if you can look under a microscope now. That was 35, 40 years ago. Maybe you can with new technology. Nevertheless, they have not observed or studied these mechanisms. They have an idea of how they want it to work, how they designed it to work, they say. And we should trust them that that really is what they designed. And we should trust that that really is the way that it works. Do not question any of that. I mean, they could have malevolent purposes in this, but you can't question that. It could be just that it doesn't work the way that they thought it did. And so my question on this from the very beginning was, if they turn your body into a manufacturing facility, then it's manufacturing that spike, and the reactions that you see to people, the fever or whatever, even if they're a temporary response to that, it's because this is magnifying. It's not just the little bit of material that they've injected, because they said from the very beginning, they're turning your body into a vaccine manufacturing plant. What is it manufacturing? The spikes. What do we know about the spikes? That they irritate people, right? But what they're saying in the paper, and the critics are saying, and the biologist who responded to me said, is that these spikes are expressed on the surface of the other cells that have been affected with this mRNA. Do you know that they stay there? And that's what he's saying, is we don't know if it breaks free. It's not a natural structure. Why would you assume that it would not break free? I would assume that it would break free. Even if it doesn't break free, is it still able to come into contact with the endothelial lining? And is it still with the things that it's going to damage, even if it remains on the cell? And how does, my question about the chain reaction is, if it isn't going through a rapid chain reaction, presumably the chain reaction would be stopped by your functioning immune system. But what if your immune system is not functioning fully or properly or quickly enough? That would explain how you can have this damage. But it goes on to say, in the conversation, the description of their podcast, he said, in good faith and on very legitimate concerns, some opposed to vaccines in general, or nucleic acid vaccinoids, and that's his term for talking about things that are kind of pseudo-vaccines, what I call GCIs, genetic code injections, have interpreted this paper as indicative of the deadliness of the MRA so-called vaccines. And then he has a link to my show. He said, these agents have been recklessly rushed into what developers hope will be administration to every person on Earth. The readers and the listeners should understand that the authors of the paper do not make the claim that the results argue for the use of any type of vaccine to generate protective antibody against the spike protein. They said the conclusion suggests that vaccination generated antibody and or exogenous antibody against S protein not only protects the host from SARS-CoV-2 infectivity, but also inhibits S protein-imposed endothelial injury. Now, how do we know that, right? Again, I would expect that they're going to put something like that in the disclaimer or their career is over. There are those S proteins that are present naturally in the virus, or in some manner on the hollow laboratory-constructed pseudoviruses, versus the S proteins being artificially expressed as a result of insertion into host cells of mRNA or pharmaceutical origin. So what we're saying is that there's a question. They're not exactly the same. That's what the paper is saying, and that's what Dave Schmidt is saying. So the question is, how similar are they? They got to be pretty similar in theory, right? Or it's not going to stop the infection. So I don't know how dissimilar they are. Then they're supposed to be locked down onto the cell. We don't know that either, do we? If they will stay attached. If they are attached. Because on the other hand, S-protein produced by the mRNA-type vaccinoid, again, his kind of pseudovax pharmaceuticals, or the DNA adenovirus vaccinoid, could become liberated by some mechanism or cell-destructive process and then subsequently bind ACE2 receptors, studying the surface of the cell lining blood vessels with consequential deleterious effects. When you have a virus, or in this particular case, MRA starts to mess with the cell to make it produce something that is not natural, I'm not surprised. I would expect there to be deleterious effects. This is essentially what a virus does. A virus attaches itself to a cell. The cell brings in the virus, takes that code, and reproduces the virus, and you get a chain reaction. It destroys the cell in the process. And I don't know if your body is manufacturing these spikes because it's getting a different set of instructions. It seems to me like that, again, the criticisms from people who are pushing back say there's not sufficient quantity. There was a very mocking article that was sent to me by somebody, not that they were mocking me with it, but it was an article that talked about the it was about a 10-page article. And it took them about 5 pages of mocking anybody who would have any concerns about vaccines produced by the government without any testing. And one of the things that they mentioned was, they said, well, the amount of that is injected with a vaccine is just minuscule. And what these people did with their pseudovirus is they gave a massive dose of these spikes. And that's why you're seeing that kind of effect. I've always seen this argument made. And people go back and forth on this whenever you're having animal studies to determine whether a particular substance is carcinogenic. On one side, the people who are doing the experiment will say, well, we're giving the animals, you know, we're using animals because they have a faster metabolism, and we're giving them massive amounts of this because we want to see what the effect is going to be in an accelerated way. Other people will say, well, that's not a legitimate thing to do because we're not going to be exposed to those types of levels. So you can't say this is carcinogenic just because you gave a massive dose of this. So you can have that kind of discussion. People have always had that kind of discussion. But again, if you are going to create immunity to something, and if you're going to turn the body into a manufacturing facility, how do you know how much is being created? How do you know when it stops? And I would suspect that the difference between the people who are getting violently sick and those who aren't are the ones whose immune system can stop it versus the ones whose immune system can't. That's just my speculation. When we look at this, and again, I don't want to get too deep into the woods because we've got a lot of things to cover. But one of the things that I thought was a good examination of this was both the looking at the mRNA. This is what Dave Schmidt and his partner did. The mRNA from the position of information, and then comparing that to the information we're allowed to have here in terms of news, social media, and things like that. He points out information can route via a channel, via a carrier or medium, from a sender and a transmitter and an observer. It can be partially or wholly corrupted, and this can happen as a result of random physical noise degrading the signal. You can have a bad telephone connection, a good example of this type of degradation of message. Distortion of the message can also result from innocent error. This could be a case of misinformation. A generalized example of this occurs in a children's game of telephone, where an original message is modified, often with humorous outcome. Do you see the analogy? This has an analogy not only to the messenger RNA, this has an analogy to the information that we have about this medical treatment that is being dictated to us, mandated to us, forced upon us. And so, just as the messenger RNA, as it is being translated and transmitted, this is how we get the variants that they're so upset about, all the mutants, right? The mutant variants. You always wind up with variants of any virus. It's one of the reasons why you can't cure the common cold. It's an infinite number of variants. And if we don't understand that, they're going to keep us gaslighted and say, well, you know, I don't think we can ever get out of this thing, because you're always going to have some more variants out there. Yeah, you always are. But he went on to say this. He said, the serious philosophical discipline of attempting to describe the means of knowing how we know something is called epistemology. This involves scientific tools for assigning degrees of certainty to observed or measured objects and events. Forensic analysis, logic, critical thinking, and the application of philosophical and historical experience adds to the building of more reliable and contextualized understandings of any matter in question. But all these things have been put in risk with this current regime of conglomerated power throughout every institution of society. And he says, what is sad about all of this? And so, you know, when I respond to him, I said, thank you for the information. I said, I don't want to add false details to my criticism of mRNA injections. And I said, you know, my questions on all this is, how do we know that the mRNA-generated spikes are not free, that they're not bound to the cell? Is it the design mechanism for the cells to reproduce a spike? Isn't that some kind of a chain reaction? Is the off switch, the immune system's learning to destroy it? What if there is significant damage before the immune system gains the ability to stop it, and so forth? And he said, well, short response, he responded to me, these are also wide open questions for which I do not have definitive answers. I'm looking at literature on these pathologic processes. But this is something that is restricted at this point because Gates and the resetters have completely captured all of the institutions. Those of us who are on the side of caution do not usually have the laboratory capacity to counter with our own research. He said, I wish I could do more at this point than just reiterate your questions. I suspect we'll see serious consequences that for many individuals it'll be too late. I'm a biologist particularly focused on the long-term species effect, without in any way intending to diminish the role of others to focus on individual suffering. But he said, we do not know the extent to which the spike protein or components could become liberated from their locations and their modes of presentation and the cell membranes. It's probably not even possible to assess it at this point for all individuals under all conditions. And he goes, there are a lot of on-off switches involved in the regulation, transcription, and translation, something that we do not know as to what degree pharma's tactics for stabilizing this or future manipulations of mRNA will not become a runaway process. If these are liberated in large numbers, you can be sure that some individuals in this process will be overwhelmed. He said vaccine-like properties from these other nucleic acid pharmaceutical platforms could be designed to introduce, for example, modified protein receptors and neurons that will alter behavior. Does anyone doubt that there will be a desire, an effort, and success in making permanent what will become what is now considered to be a therapeutic effect? In other words, they're going to make this permanent. They're already talking about that. We're going to have mRNA vaccines for everything. Oh, and by the way, you'll be forced to take it because you're establishing that precedent right now. He said, I'm trying to be as scientifically rigorous as possible. At the same time, I'm opposed to modification of human DNA by artificial means. He says, that derives from a Christian principle of prohibiting self-mutilation for non-therapeutic reasons. And he said, if you go back and look at Aristotle, Thomas, you understand genetic modification would be the most profound type of altering the form of the living body, for example, the soul. He said, even much of the Catholic hierarchy, sadly, even the pro-life organizations are reluctant to raise these issues forcefully. And that's the key. These issues have to be raised. These things have to be confronted. And we have to get forceful. And if they're going to shut us down and silence us without any answers, we have to get louder and more forceful. He said, so I just want to inform you, he says, I'm not an immunologist, a vaccinologist, virologist, molecular biologist, cell biologist. He says, I am a neurobiologist with training in electrophysiology, recording electricity from the nervous system, and I've taught human physiology, human cadaver dissection, anatomy with histology. But look, this is about critical thinking. This is about examining what they're telling us as to whether or not it makes any sense, whether or not it is consistent. And this is why we do not need to apologize for any of this, and we do not need to defer to anybody who is an expert. And you got a lot of people who are experts. You got people who are world-renowned epidemiologists and virologists who have opposed this from the very beginning, but their voices are silenced. Their careers are ended. What does that tell you? That's pretty obvious, isn't it? He said, I believe we can win by this approach as being assertive as possible. And he says, and I can be quite aggressive about it. We keep hammering, as you were doing, by pointing out what we do not know. If this was not a charged environment, we would be hailed as providing the necessary role of advocatus diaboli. In other words, a devil's advocate, or as I like to think of it, he says, the angelic advocate. In other words, they should welcome. If they're legitimate, they should welcome questions. If they're telling you the truth, it can stand up to examination. And they should be transparent. Instead, they're hiding things and mandating your behavior. And that's all you need to know. You can get into the weeds of how this stuff works, but if these people have got stuff they're not showing you, how much does it cost? I'll buy it. Time is all we lost. I'll try it. If he can't even run his own life, I'll be damned if he's going to run mine. And if they won't tell you what they're doing, just making demands and kicking anything else away from you that could help, that we know helps, that we've had multiple doctors who've treated people, unlike Fauci, telling us that this works from the very beginning. You know this thing stinks. You know that. You don't have to go any further with this. This is an article another person sent to me from the Globe and Mail in Canada. Apparently those who are vaccine hesitant are a threat to society, but we need to be treated with compassion. As we say in the South, bless her heart. but, you know, or as they say in academia, with all due respect, before they stick the knife in you, right? And that's exactly what this guy did. Today's vaccines, he says, are shown to be amongst the safest medications on the planet. Still, there are people who reject these miracles of modern science. They're well-meaning. They're educated. They're often pillars of their community, with all due respect. Yet, the vaccine hesitant represent one of the greatest threats to society. So you and I are a threat to them. Why are their beliefs so toxic? Do you see how quickly he gets to the point where our beliefs are deadly? They're toxic. The vaccines are safe, but any questions about their vaccines are toxic. Do you have any questions? I could rush you off to, you know, with the people at HARPA. If you're questioning what I'm telling you, you're obviously a deranged, violent person and you need to be incarcerated, perhaps by the military, indefinite detention, without due process. Remember that? Remember when Obama did that? But you didn't care when Trump did that, when Trump laid the foundation for that, when he talked about doing that just with guns. It's much bigger than guns, folks, much bigger than guns. And now it's being financed and extended by Biden, because it wasn't about Trump and it wasn't about Biden in the first place. They aren't running the show. The CIA is running the show. Homeland Security is running the show. The bureaucracy is running the show. Why are their beliefs so toxic? Because not only do they risk the welfare of themselves and their loved ones, but they threaten the health of the rest of us too. Again, this is the idea that, you know, your seatbelt doesn't protect you. My seatbelt protects you. Right? That's what Joy Behar was trying to sell everybody. Well, we need to mandate these things because, you know, I'm not protected if I get my vaccine. You got to get your vaccine as well. And then she starts talking about seatbelts. So, yeah, let's talk about seatbelts. You know, if you wear your seatbelt and you've got your airbag, your life is at risk if I don't have a seatbelt and airbag in my car. That's what they're saying. Either your seatbelt and your airbag works or it doesn't work. Either your vaccine works and your mask works, or they don't work. They've used that argument for flu vaccines for decades. They used that argument for the mask at the beginning of this, and I said, look what they're doing. This is their approach. This person goes on to say, I meet with these type of people daily in my work at the ER. People with chronic respiratory conditions who wind up on ventilators after balking at their annual flu shot or pneumonia vaccine. It could be because you gave them remdesivir and you withheld effective Therapeutics because you didn't make enough money, and then you put them on your invasive ventilators and kill them. That could be the kind of people that you're meeting with, Dr. Cash. I found lecturing and disparaging them accomplishes nothing. See? He knows better than you. Except to entrench their views and to further the divide. So he said, the fiercest ones of them have their own equivalent of the big lie, the conspiracy theory that drove the insurrection on Capitol Hill. It boils down to how they make you into a violent threat to them, always a violent threat to them. Nothing that they can do can protect them as long as we're around. We must be incarcerated, locked up, excluded from society, vilified, demonized, censored. It boils down to one shameful study from the 1990s that falsely equated the measles vaccine with a higher risk of developing autism. Well, do you have any theories about how autism exploded to where it's so incredibly common now when we'd never heard of it before? Do you even care? No, you don't care. That's right. You don't care. First, do no harm. You don't care about that either, do you, doctor? Dr. ER. I believe we all owe it to society to at least try to sway them from their ironically infectious and unfounded beliefs, but to do so with all kindness and respect. Yeah, well, you know, here's what this really looks like. Michael Smirkanish is now talking about how we have to be shunned.
Here's an option. There was a USA Today essay that was published by a former prosecutor named Michael Stern. And I discussed this briefly on radio yesterday. He says, we've got to shun folks. We've got to shun people into getting vaccinated. The shunning suggestion is this. Businesses should make vaccination a requirement for employment. A COVID outbreak can shut down a business and be financially devastating, and failure to enforce basic health and safety measures is not fair to employees who have to work in offices, factories, and stores where close contact is required. Things should get personal, too. People should require friends to be vaccinated to attend the barbecues and birthday parties they host. Friends don't let friends spread COVID. Friends don't let friends spread COVID. Yesterday's survey question at Smirkanish.com asked whether it's time to shun. 7,241 people responded. What do you think the percentage was who said yes? How about 73%?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the person who wrote, and this is the article that was being pushed around, got a lot of traction, respectfulinsolence.com, about that Salk Institute paper on the quote-unquote deadly COVID-19 spike protein. Well, actually, it was deadly. What they're saying, though, is, oh, that's a different spike protein than the one that a vaccine makes. Well, if it's so different, why are you making it? What value does it have if it's so different? And he says, in fact, I have an idea. This person who does this is bottom line. He goes, well, you look at this, and here's the bottom line. These people said that they like the vaccine. They take the vaccine themselves. They want everybody to take the vaccine. Bow down to your lord and master, big pharmaceutical companies. Do not question that. And he says, and I have an idea for authors and for university press officials from here on out. Any study of the spike protein's role and the pathogenesis of COVID-19 should include the study itself and in any press releases a strong disclaimer emphasizing how the results of the study do not say anything about the safety of the vaccines for all sorts of reasons. So you can say whatever you want. You can do whatever research you want, but we've already reached our conclusions. As a matter of fact, we knew before any of these things happened, we had numbers out there from Fauci. Oh, yeah, it's going to be very highly safe and effective. I think it's going to be very effective. They didn't even started manufacturing. I hadn't done any tests with it. Oh, yeah, I think it's going to be very effective. And I think we're going to have this percentage of people get vaccinated so we can have this herd immunity, right? You've heard of that, right? You heard of immunity? Well, it's a herd mentality. This was also sent to me by a doctor. Won't mention his name, get him in trouble. But this is straight from the CDC's VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And guess what? They ranked we've looked at this a number of ways, right? For example, I think one of the best metrics is to say, that in the first 3 months, the number of people who reported into the system as events where people had died was a little over 3,000. It's now over 4,000. But in the first 3 months, it was 3,000. And that was more than all the deaths reported combined for the last 11 years from vaccines. Therefore, people dying at a rate 44 times any of these other vaccines. That's an important way to look at this data, to look at their own data. And then this doctor sent this to me. He says, look at this. If you rank the VAERS reports for the past 31 years, rank them by the number of events reported per vaccine. Guess which one is at the top? It's the COVID-19 vaccines. 45.5% of all the vaccine adverse events in the last 31 years, 45.5% coming from vaccines that have been out for only 4 months. Think about that. About half of all the events have happened from these vaccines in just the last 4 months, compared to all the other vaccines combined over 31 years. Number two was at 15.8%. That was a Haemophilus B conjugate vaccine. Number three fell down to 10.4%, hepatitis B vaccine. Then the polio vaccine, live oral, 10.5%. Diphtheria, polio was 9.75%. Diphtheria and tetanus was 8%. You see how it's rapidly dropping. You get down to MMR, that was 3%. But over 4 months, 45.5% of all the adverse effects that we've seen over the last 31 years. The data speaks pretty highly. And yet, when we see Fauci, he went on to the Meet the Depressed. He went on with Chuck Todd. He also did a stint on ABC with George Stephanopoulos, the Clinton propagandist. And as a matter of fact, between the two of them, when he was talking about how we need to propagandize those of us who are hesitant, I'm not hesitant. Don't put me in that category. I'm not vaccine hesitant. I will not take it under any circumstances. You will have to strap me down like Darth Vader did Princess Leia before I'll ever take one of these things. I will never, ever consent to take this. I don't care what you threaten me with. But anyway, he went on with Chuck Todd, and he thinks that the number of cases are undercounted. Listen to this.
And the CDC has been saying all along that it is very likely that we're undercounting. You know, the model says that it's a significant amount, as you mentioned correctly, 900,000. That's a bit more than I would have thought the undercounting was. But, you know, sometimes the models are right online. Sometimes they're a bit off. But I think there's no doubt, Chuck, that we are and have been undercounting. What that tells us is something that we've known. You know, we're living through a historic pandemic.
This is how they run the big lie,
which we haven't seen in over 100 years.
That's true. And it looks like these numbers are going to make even 1918 look a bit smaller than what we dealt with now.
It's going to be the biggest ever.
As always, sir, appreciate you coming on.
Absolute, total lie. So just double down on the lie. You know, when you say, anybody that tested positive, if they die within 30 days, even if they drove their motorcycle into a wall, that's COVID. And, you know, when the guy was questioned on that, he said, well, could be. We don't do any autopsy, so it could have been COVID. I don't know, maybe he had a cough and that caused, from his COVID, and that caused him to drive into the wall. Any person who, you know, gets the PCR test magnified by a trillion times, literally a trillion times, 2 to the 40th power, cycle threshold of 40. If they die within 30 days, they died from it. But then if you died within 30 hours or 30 minutes of getting the vaccine, they had other comorbidities there. You can't say that was the vaccine. 30 minutes? Oh, come on. You know, that's something else. But 30 days, yeah, that was COVID for sure. So, yeah, undercounted. And then he goes on. Chuck Todd asked him about masks. Are we ever going to get rid of the masks? Well, here's what Fauci had to say.
Clearly, if you look at the data, diminishes respiratory diseases. We've had practically a non-existent flu season this year merely because people were doing the kinds of public health things that were directed predominantly against COVID-19.
See,
the Australians during their winter, same thing. They had almost no flu, largely due to the kinds of things, including mask wearing. So it is conceivable that as we go on a year or two or more from now, that during certain seasonal periods, mm-hmm. when you have respiratory-borne viruses like the flu, people might actually elect to wear masks to diminish the likelihood that you'll spread these respiratory-borne diseases.
The Joseph Goebbels of the 21st century. He says, yeah, you know, I think we undercounted this. Let's double that. And I think that's still undercounted right there. And then he says, you know, and it's just like the flu disappeared. Why did the flu disappear? It isn't because we relabeled these respiratory diseases COVID-19. No, it's because the mask works. See, it works. Well, you know, Fauci, we never put masks on people for the flu before. And if it doesn't stop COVID, the most dangerous pandemic the world has ever seen. And again, just imagine, you know, more than two orders of magnitude higher, the case fatality rate for Ebola than for what they even pretend is COVID-19. 100 times worse for Ebola. And Ebola, like every one of these other pandemics, they went out of their way to downplay any public concern. Whereas with this one, that is 100 times less dangerous, they went out of their way to upplay it and to say, we're never going to get out of this. Never going to get out of it. And this is how he's going to propagandize the vaccine hesitant.
Trusted messengers out there getting people to understand why it's important to get vaccinated for themselves, their family, and the community. And, you know, different types of people in different phases in life have different trusted messengers. It could be sports figures. It could be entertainment figures. It could be clergy, or it could be your family doctor. That's the first thing, trusted messengers. The next thing is make it as easy as possible for people to get vaccinated, which we're doing now with the 40,000 pharmacies where you don't have to go online, you don't have to call up, you can just walk right in a walk-in and get vaccinated. Mobile units to go out into not easily accessible areas. So I think those two are the major ways that we can get that last group of
no
people
treatment.
Who seem to be recalcitrant to get them to understand
days and
why
no
it's so important to get
vaccine.
Vaccinated.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to use celebrities. We're going to use pastors, he said. You know, it depends on what we can do. Religious leaders or whatever. You see them doing that quite a bit. As a matter of fact, they strategize about how to do that. A Yale study financed by the NIH talking about how they can use science, arguments from authority, constant media, use censorship to stop other things, but especially modeling this with people that are trusted to make people feel guilty about harming their neighbor. You're not loving your neighbor if you don't take an experimental vaccine, right? No. I'm loving my neighbor by standing against the removal of informed consent. I'm loving my neighbor by standing against this medical tyranny that is being rolled out, whatever the justification. But here's an example of a celebrity. This is the celebrity formerly known as Prince.
Distributed to everyone, everywhere. We cannot rest or truly recover until there is fair distribution to every corner of the world.
Yeah, there you go. That's all you need to know. We cannot rest until everybody everywhere on Earth has had this vaccine. You've never heard this about a therapeutic. You've never heard it about a vaccine before. Again, this ought to be raising all kinds of suspicion with you as to how this is operating. But on Mother's Day, you know, we had Fauci talking about the mask mandates, and this story came out. Southwest Airlines removes a masked toddler with disabilities from a flight Because, you know, Biden's got a mandate. Well, actually, it's not Biden's mandate. It's actually the CDC's mandate that is now being dictated to everybody about being able to travel on airplanes or buses or trains or anything. Southwest Airlines removed a mask-compliant child. Understand, this child had the mask on the entire time. The child never took the mask off. The parents were concerned that he might, and so they contacted Southwest. This is a Denver flight last week. They contacted them and said the three-year-old, they said he has some emotional issues, and they wanted to know if this is going to be a problem. They wanted to go visit their 94-year-old grandmother in Florida. They'd call the airline ahead of time to notify them about the child's condition. He has sensory processing disorders. Said she was initially told there would be no issues. But when we actually got to our flight, we were told there was an issue, and they had to ask a supervisor to get the captain's permission for us to board, even though when I had called, they said there would be no issue. She then added that the captain said he felt uncomfortable having the toddler on the plane. I would feel uncomfortable flying in a plane with a captain that is that jittery. He's got a door now that locks, you know, because after 9/11, they had the, because of that narrative, they put locks on the doors. The little toddler is not going to come in and open up the door and cough on him. Can you believe this? Can you believe this, Captain? Can you believe this airline? Can you believe this country? I don't recognize America anymore. I really don't. The captain felt uncomfortable having the toddler on the plane, despite letters from his occupational therapist and his pediatrician attesting to his parents' coping skills in the event that he grew distressed with his mask. But he still had the mask on. He was not distressed. He was not removing it. She said her family emphasized to Southwest employees that the boy would keep the mask on throughout the flight. However, moments after they boarded the plane and took their seats, the supervisor approached the family and made them disembark. She said her son had been wearing the mask contentedly at the time. She said, "We were deplaned not for our behaviors, but for disclosing our son's disability." Now, as much as I sympathize with these people, let me explain to you that we must not live our lives groveling for permission. I don't live my life as a granted privilege from people in authority who don't have that authority to grant that to me. I am a human being. I have freedom and dignity, and you better not let these B.F. Skinner behavioral psychologists and politicians and power-hungry corporations take it from you. Do not let them take away your basic humanity and your liberty. You're surrendering it to these people. Don't ask for permission. Matter of fact, the lady who, I think it's the same lady who came up with the term bug for software, said it's a lot easier to say I'm sorry than to ask for permission. You know, don't ever ask for permission for anything. That's always been my philosophical approach to this anyway. But while we're talking about Mother's Day, listen to what Fauci had to say. You want to see this happening to little toddlers, entire families being kicked off of airplanes? You think this is ever going to stop? This is done because of this superstition, this ritual about masks, which we're not allowed to question, which they don't have to show any evidence that they work. We just do what we're told in this Simon Says world. And here's what the big Simon has to say about masks forever.
Clearly, if you look at the data, diminishes respiratory diseases. We've had practically a non-existent flu season this year merely because people were doing the kinds of public health things that were directed predominantly against COVID-19. The Australians during their winter, same thing. They had almost no flu, largely.
Actually, I played the wrong one. I just played that clip for you. Let me go back to the one where he's talking about how long this is going to last. Is it going to be a seasonal thing, he's asked.
And there are lots of questions out there about the safety of the vaccines for pregnant women and women trying to have kids. What's your message to them?
Well, if you look at the data, George, there doesn't seem to be a problem at all. There have literally been tens and tens of thousands of women who have pregnant, who have gotten vaccinated. There are no red flags, nothing that looks like there's going to be any problem. So I think that that's something that we really don't need to worry about that much. It looks good.
Give everyone a sense of what the country is going to look like next Mother's Day.
Well, George, I hope that next Mother's Day we're going to see a dramatic difference than what we're seeing right now. I believe that we will be about as close to back to normal as we can. And there's some conditions to that, George. We've got to make sure that we get the overwhelming proportion of the population vaccinated. When that happens, the virus doesn't really have any place to go. There aren't a lot of vulnerable people around. And where there are not a lot of vulnerable people around, you're not going to see a surge. You're not going to see the kinds of numbers we see now. That being the case, I think we could approach what we used to remember as normal before all of this tragedy happened.
Yeah, we might be able to approach normal in another year. Another year. We're 422 days into what was going to be a two-week pause. And maybe in another year, maybe we'll be back to normal. He's more tentative about this than he was a year ago at this time, after we'd already been into it for a couple of months. We'll be right back. The Common Man. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right, I want to talk about what happened with Arthur Pawlowski, who was arrested over the weekend. I interviewed him about a month ago. It's absolutely outrageous. If you've seen the video of this, and I'm going to play it, it's fairly long. But they pulled him over with, some people say, five cars as they were pulling out. By the time they arrested him and pulled out, it looked like they had seven vehicles is what we counted. But they did it on a busy highway. I mean, they've got him down on his knees on an interstate. Absolutely outrageous. Handcuffing him, putting his hands behind his back, and then they lift him up, you know, by his arms, and he doesn't put his feet down. So then they just drag him along the ground, threw him into the police cruiser. And Rebel News has been, they're in Canada, and they've done a great job, frankly, of covering this, of covering not only Arthur Pawlowski, but a lot of other people who are pushing back against this, the few people who are pushing back against all of the individual rights recognized in the Charter of Canada. And as they're pushing back against this, Rebel News itself has been raided and attacked. But they've also set up a fundraising site for Pastor Arthur Pawlowski. And I'll give you that. It's Save Arthur. And again, you spell his name A-R-T-U-R. SaveArthur.com if you want to help with his legal defense. He was made to kneel in the middle of a very busy highway. It was clear from the moment of his arrest that this had nothing to do with the virus and everything to do with political control, writes Rebel News. Since that moment, he's been treated brutally, thrown painfully into a police car, then forced to sit on a concrete slab in a jail cell where the lights are never turned off. He is separated from his brother, who was also arrested, but he has no privacy. Curious police come to gawk at him, like he's a circus animal. But he's now more resolved than ever. They were able to get in contact with him and record a conversation with him. The police allowed him to call his wife, but they were there. The reporter from Rebel News was with his wife at the time, and she passed the phone over to him. He was able to ask questions about the conditions he was being kept in and to record that. He is also unaware that his three-person legal team has been trying relentlessly to speak with him, but the police have refused to put their phone calls through to him. See that? Keeping him in a cell, as I mentioned before, all he can do is sleep on the cold cement floor. Bright lights on constantly, which is not the condition that other prisoners are being kept in. Keeping his lawyers from talking to him. He is being treated as a political dissident because this is all politics. The virus is political. The virus is the political virus of totalitarian communism. That's what came out of China. Stop all the stuff about Wuhan. These people, and they're getting all, see, this is what bothers me. The people who want to focus on Wuhan and the biosafety level 4 lab there, that was a perfectly reasonable thing to talk about before this happened. But even if, as I said a year ago, actually 422 days ago, I said, even if that were the case, even if this was something that was engineered with gain of function, making it more deadly, more easily transmissible, even if that is true, even if it was released deliberately, not accidentally, this is the wrong approach to take because this is a political cancer. You want to talk about curing cancer with mRNA? No, no, no. We have a political cancer that is metastasized throughout our society over the last 422 days, and we may be at stage 4. We may be beyond the point of treatment. The fact that the police were abusing him, stopping him from getting legal counsel is outrageous, and it shows that this has never been about a pandemic, says Rebel News, and they're absolutely right. He's being treated as a political prisoner. This isn't an arrest about a health order. It is an extraordinary rendition, like the CIA does. He simply won't close his church at the whim of public health officials, the same public health officials who have no problem with Costco and Walmart being open. You got that? He was one of the first Canadians to get a lockdown ticket in April 2020 for the crime of feeding the homeless. Oh, they don't like that. Feeding the homeless. He was charged with inciting people to go to church. You know what? That's the job description of a pastor. Inciting people to go to church. They get together. Not just to go and hear a lecture. You can hear a lecture on the internet. No, no, no. You go to church because you need other people around you to hold you accountable, and that includes the people who are talking to you from the podium. That's why you go to church. You need the support network of other people who, like you, are struggling with ordinary things in life, but also struggling with sin. Prior to the pastor's aggressive arrest, it appears that he refused to get up and walk, writes the New American. So the police dragged him by the arms across the asphalt like a mass murderer. So the members of the street church allegedly expelled the police from the sanctuary during the services. They showed up in full force to try to crash the service and said no. So what they did was, like a pack of wolves, they waited until he was alone, pulled him over on a busy highway, handcuffed him on the ground, took him out. The second pastor to be imprisoned in Alberta, once considered to be the freest province in Canada. They've got a conservative prime minister, right? Or whatever is Grand Poobah, okay? Whatever the title, I don't care. He's a dictator. James Coates, unlike Pawlowski, turned himself into authorities, but they still put him in a maximum security cell for 35 days, still gave him the treatment, especially because he refused to comply with an order issued by the health bureaucrats requiring him to turn away church members and maintain the required reduced church capacity. No, I'm not here to turn anybody away. According to the news site Church Leader, quote, up to 1,000 people are permitted to listen to a trial online. That's James Coates' trial. But there will be no video streaming of the proceedings. The public health prosecutor was granted permission not to reveal her identity after she expressed concerns about security. You should be concerned. You should be concerned because of what you're doing. If what you were doing wasn't a crime, if what you were doing wasn't dictatorial, if you weren't acting like a dictator or dictatress, whatever you are, You wouldn't have to be concerned if you were doing the right thing, if you were following the law, if you were obeying the Charter of Canada. You're a criminal. Nuremberg. First, do no harm. Nuremberg. Adam Suess, the reporter from Rebel News, said Walmart and Costco are open across Canada. So are liquor stores. So are marijuana stores. But a Christian pastor cannot open his doors without a massive police raid. Yeah, his other crimes include feeding the homeless. He has been arrested 10 times. The city of Calgary has spent over $2 million to prosecute him for feeding the homeless in past years. He said, I can't recognize my beloved Canada. In the letter, I am being warned not to feed the poor. They want to enslave us like the Egyptians. They want to be the pharaohs of today. Look at what is happening in Germany, said Pawlowski. You can't even leave from one city to go to another. Is that the future you want? Is that the future you want for your children, for your grandchildren? Because he said, if we don't do it now, I don't think we're going to have tomorrow. Our rights are being taken away from us so quickly, it is unbelievable. So again, the charge is, quote, requesting, inciting, or inviting others to go to church. This is where the world is right now. They said it's important to understand, this is coming from the dictators there, it's important to understand that law enforcement recognizes people's desire to participate in faith-based gatherings as well as their right to protest. However, that's all you need to know. However, we're in the midst of a global pandemic, so we have to comply with public health orders. This is like saying, I'm a big supporter of the Second Amendment, but hey, we're going to take the guns and do the due process later, right? Remember Trump? Oh, he's a big supporter. NRA loves him. Oh, just take the guns and do the due process later. Why? Because he's got a guy who is setting up a major agency whose first approach is not about, supposed to be about health, right? Going to have the health advanced research projects, HARPA. It's going to be about health. No, no, no. Their first concern is to profile you and to determine that you're not mentally stable enough to have a gun or even to be at large. You need to be taken away. We've seen this for a long time from the Democrats, haven't we? Who come in and say, well, I'm a big supporter. I love the Second Amendment, but I need to have fill in the blank. And they have a long laundry list of all the different ways that they want to infringe on your God-given liberties for which they are prohibited from doing anything. And now we're at the point where we have the Republicans doing the same thing. Pawlowski said, I grew up under a communist dictatorship behind the Iron Curtain under the boot of the Soviets. He said, so it was like a flashback when those police officers showed up at my church. Everything kind of came back to life from my childhood. The only thing I could do is to fend off the wolves as a shepherd, and I used my voice to get rid of them. There's also, besides these two pastors, there is also a man who has a small cafe, the Whistle Stop Cafe in the small hamlet of Mirror, Alberta. And despite pouring rain, despite a preemptive court injunction, hundreds of people gathered outside the Whistle Stop Cafe for the Save Alberta campout protest. They were there to support cafe owner Chris Scott and to challenge the public health dictates. There was a decision at one point to start mounting enforcement, said the police officer, Corporal Savinkov. They don't even bother to change their names from Russian. I mean, this is pure Soviet-style takeover. So Savinkov, yeah, just take them out to the gulag for their own good, right? Take them down and psychologically profile them so we can have an excuse to lock them up. The Alberta Health System said it closed the cafe after the agency received more than 400 complaints since January. Well, I have a question. Is this one crank who sent them 400 letters, or is this four cranks who sent them 100 letters apiece or whatever, right? But they have hundreds, several hundred people in support. What difference does it make? Are our rights negotiable? Can they be taken away by unelected bureaucrats? Can your rights be taken away by an angry, irritated mob of 400 people complaining about the fact that your business is open? They don't have to go to his business. They can wear their masks. They can get their vaccine. Oh, that's right. They've been brainwashed that their masks don't protect them and their vaccines don't protect them, that you are the virus. You are the threat to them. Do you understand how dangerous this kind of gaslighting propaganda is? The Whistle Stop Cafe owner said, I've been accused of a lot of things over this. They think it's about money. They think it's about popularity. I could care less about that. I'm not fine with anyone telling me what to do with my body or how to earn an income. So 3 hours later, they show up with body cameras. They start issuing tickets, and then they haul him off under arrest. This is the hill to die on, folks. This is the thing that we must stop. It's absolutely imperative that we must stop this. I must stop the broadcast now because we are going to be continuing on KHNC. Again, you can find the website just by typing that in, but the exact website is 1360 KHNC. Many people asked me to give that website out. I'm not sure if we have a link up to it or not, but you can listen to it live. But we also will put up, they have a podcast each day on their website of the broadcast, so you can listen to the previous show. We're putting up the shows on the video channels as well as on the podcast channels. Although on Friday we did not get that show up, but we'll get it posted up, Friday's show, and we'll get today's show up. But typically we get it up every day as it happens. And just to make it a little bit easier, remember the call letters, KHNC. The K is things west of the Mississippi. HNC was the original Heart of Northern Colorado. I had a lady send me, I think it was a lady, sent me an email. I've got it here somewhere on the desk saying, there's a farmer a long time ago, he had somebody come up to him and say, you know, I just believe, and I forget what they said, that you're going to have a radio station here. And it's like, he didn't even know anything about radio, but he believed what you had to say. So looked into it and wound up putting it there. That became the Heart of Northern Colorado, HNC. But it's now, the moniker is Roar of the Rockies. So we're going to stop the broadcast at this point. If you want to pick up that hour, I've got more to say about the trans agenda, about what is happening with transportation, and also the Trump Civil War. So thank you for listening. That'll be it for the podcast today. The rest of this will continue on the other broadcast.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.